Well, good afternoon to you. Let's see if I've got the microphone working right here. Yeah, there we go. And you're listening to On the Air with Glenn Coble. That's me. And it's Thursday. And for those of you who thought I might be talking to James Anderson, I apologize. I put that on my Facebook page, which was wrong, because James comes on the last Thursday of every month, not the fourth Thursday of every month. Tune in next week at this time, and you'll hear James Anderson, who is Marion County's naturalist. He has taught me a lot about coyote scat. Now, if you don't know what scat is, it's poo-poo. And he showed me where I could find it out on the tall grass trail, and I found it. And I'm not sure that that's something I wanted to find, but that's the type of knowledge that James Anderson can pass along to you. By the way, happy birthday, James. It's his birthday today, so that's another reason why he couldn't be here. Now, we are going to go over the Gettysburg Address, I'm going to try to, you know, you probably don't like this. It's like going to school, right? Nobody likes to have to learn. There won't be a test, no tests. But I'm going to try to further your education maybe once a month or twice a month. A couple weeks ago, I read the speech by Frederick Douglass about being a slave in the United States. And it's a terrific speech. And I will admit that it's hard to read and it's hard to understand because they spoke differently back in those days. And the Gettysburg Address is no different. It's actually, Lincoln did a lot better job of making it more brief and also relatively clear. I don't think there'll be any question on the Gettysburg Address. We've all probably read it at one time or another, but it never hurts to remind ourselves of where this country came from, where our democracy started. And actually, this was several years after our democracy started. It happened to be the consecration of the Gettysburg burial grounds, I'll get into that. While we were on break, I did have somebody text me on my Facebook, and you're welcome to do that. My Facebook is glenncoble@hotmail.com, and you're more than welcome to Facebook me and say, hey, would you talk about this? This person asked me if I would go over what I believe about defunding the police. I think it's a misunderstood concept. I also believe that the people that came up with that name did it no service. Defunding the police makes it sound like you take all the money away from the police and have anarchy. Well, I don't think anybody wants to do that. But anyway, we'll talk about that after I go through this Gettysburg Address stuff. Kind of interesting, this Gettysburg Address. It followed the battle at Gettysburg, and that battle was July 1st through the 3rd, 1863. Have you ever been to Gettysburg? It's a beautiful place to go, and it will make you think. They try to let you make your own conclusions. You go around to the different sites, like if you want to go to the battleground itself, where the major battle happened, there you walk out, quarter of a mile into the fields, and there's a speaker stand. And you push the little button, and it tells you what you're looking at. And it takes you back as a Union soldier as you cross the field. A Confederate soldier, as you cross the field into terrible gunfire coming from the high ground. It's quite quite interesting. It was at they were removing the fallen Union soldiers at the time. They were burying soldiers in makeshift graves as they were preparing to build the National Cemetery at Gettysburg, and that began on October 17th. And they invited President Lincoln to be involved in the ceremonies. The ceremonies were going to be, I believe, November 19th, is it? Something like that. Yes, November 19th. They were going to consecrate that land. It was a desire, and this is a quote from David Willis of the committee that invited Lincoln. It is the desire that after oration, you, as chief executive of the nation, formally set apart these grounds to their sacred use by a few appropriate remarks. Now, I love that, by a few appropriate remarks. The orators of his day thought that a few appropriate remarks would be less than an hour. The gentleman that spoke before Lincoln, let me continue on reading on this and it'll give you a better idea. On the train trip from Washington, D.C. to Gettysburg on November 18th, Lincoln was accompanied by three members of his cabinet, William Seward, John Usher, and Montgomery Blair, several foreign officials, and he was kind of feeling weak. On the morning of November 19th, Lincoln mentioned to Nicolay that he was dizzy. Hay noted that during the speech, Lincoln's face had a ghastly color and that he was sad, mournful, almost haggard. After the speech, when Lincoln boarded the 6:30 p.m. train to Washington, D.C., he was feverish and weak with a severe headache. A protracted illness followed, which included a vesicular rash, and it was diagnosed as a mild case of smallpox. It thus seems highly likely that Lincoln was in the prodromal period of smallpox when he delivered the Gettysburg Address. I'm going to have to get Dr. Fauci to come tell me what a prodromal period is. Anyway, he was preceded. This is the program that was set forth for the day of the Gettysburg Address. The program was organized in the day by Willis and his committee, and it included, first of all, there was going to be music. Then there was going to be a prayer by Reverend T.H. Stockton, Doctor of Divinity. And then there was going to be music by the Marine Band, directed by Francis Scala. And then there was going to be an oration by the Honorable Edward Everett called The Battles of Gettysburg. Now, that oration went on for almost 2 hours, if not completely 2 hours. And then they had a music, another hymn that came on and was played by the Marine Band. And then there was supposed to be dedicatorial remarks by the President of the United States. And then there was going to be a dirge. Back then they did a lot of dirges at the end of funerals. Anymore, you don't hear so much dirge. And then the benediction by Reverend H.L. Bogger, I believe it's pronounced. He was also a Doctor of Divinity. Anyway, Edward Everett, the Honorable Edward Everett, went on for 2 hours. you will see how short Lincoln's speech was after that. And while it was his speech, actually, was the more famous of the two speeches that were given that day. But Everett's two-hour oration was quite significant. It was 13,607 words. Let me read how it began. And you'll understand how the people of that day eulogized people, and how they, it's kind of their way of speaking back in those days, especially when it's public oration. Okay, this is I'm not sure, the Honorable Edward Everett. I was thinking it was Reverend, but no, it's the Honorable Edward Everett. Standing beneath this serene sky, outlooking these broad fields, now reposing from the labors of the waning year, the mighty Alleghenies dimly towering before us, the graves of our brethren beneath our feet, it is with hesitation that I raise my poor voice to break the eloquent silence of God and nature. But the duty to which you have called me must be performed. Grant me, I pray you, your indulgence and your sympathy. That's the way he started this two-hour-long speech. Now, people that were there knew it was going to be very, very long. So I'm not sure if they took little, whether they took notes or if they took little naps, but the people all knew it was going to be a very long speech. This is the way it ended. But they, I am sure, will join us in saying, as we bid farewell to the dust of these martyr heroes, that whosoever throughout the civilized world and the accounts of this great warfare are read and down to the last period of recorded time in the glorious annals of our common country, there will be no brighter page than that which relates to the battles of Gettysburg. Kind of highfalutin language, huh? It amazes me how I was going to say pompous, but that's not really the word. They weren't being pompous. That's just the way they talked in those days. That's the way they orated in those days. They didn't talk to each other that way. That's just the way that kind of showed that you were a learned person if you could talk like that. All right. They were, as a matter of fact, it even points out that lengthy dedication was pretty common at cemeteries in that era. It had begun apparently in 1831 when Justice Joseph Story delivered the dedication address at Mount Auburn Cemetery in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And I'm going to have to look that up because I don't remember that that's one of the great speeches of all times. Most of these long oratories were related to ceremonies that were had to do with cemeteries. You know, they were honoring the dead, and apparently they thought those highfalutin words would get up to those dead, the thousands that had died there at Gettysburg in 3 days. I might as well just get into this. This is Lincoln's address, and you'll be shocked at how short it is. Not that you haven't probably read it in school before, but I was shocked when I read it and noticed how short it truly was. As a matter of fact, I'm going to wait until we get through the next break to read it, just because I'd hate to stop it in midstream. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Gettysburg. It's a terrific movie, and I'm not sure how exact it is. As a matter of fact, I have heard that it isn't totally exact to what happened, but it is a terrific movie, and it will give you a sense of what went on. And right now, we are in the midst of arguing whether those great leaders of the Southern Confederacy, and I'm saying great advisedly, I understand there are people that, well, they did lose, and they were traitors because they seceded from the Union. Leaders like Lee and many of his generals were great army generals. And right now we're trying to decide whether it's right for the United States to have statues that that honor those men, or whether we should not honor traitors in that way. And that's kind of where we are right now, as many of them have already come down. It's even extended beyond the Civil War to people like Columbus. So anyway, we will we'll read the Gettysburg Address after we take a couple of minutes here on a break. And note how short this is when I do read it, but how succinct it is.
Have you heard my interviews with Phyllis Diller here on WWGH?
Have I heard it? I could recite it word for word.
Wow, Charlie, you must have a great memory.
Well, not really, but after 6,432 airings, it just becomes a part of your life. The sun comes up, the sun goes down, the moon comes out, and you hear Phyllis Diller's interview and cackle on WWGH.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
3, 2, 1. Oh, no. Which button am I...
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear... Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
All right, we're back here in... On the Air with Glenn Coble, and I'm going over a little of the background of the Gettysburg Address, and now I will read to you the words of the Gettysburg Address, and I'm absolutely certain that you've heard these before, but try and listen to the way they caught the sadness of the country at the time and the desire of Lincoln to honor the dead for this particular battle at Gettysburg, which killed thousands of both men from North and the South. All right, here are the words of our President Lincoln. 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on the battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate in a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that the nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But, in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note, nor long remember, what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be with dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for for which they gave their last full measure of devotion, that we may highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from this earth. Pretty profound words. And that kept people spellbound for, I don't know what, 2 minutes after a two-hour oratory by a very brilliant speaker. When I read that, and I've read it three or four times just to get ready for today, I know it didn't sound like it, but I get chills. I still get chills, and I've probably read it more than a dozen times in my life, but I still get chills thinking how difficult that must have been. And he wrote it, from what I understand, he basically wrote it on a napkin. I don't know that it was really a napkin, but he wrote it. It was not one of those things that he brought all of his brilliant writers to his desk, and they all sat around and finely honed every word. He was that good a speaker that he honed it all himself, just in his dedication to the task at hand. Lincoln, our very first Republican president, was undoubtedly not a perfect man. he is, by the way, in the Wrestlers Hall of Fame. I think he won 220 some matches. He was a terrific wrestler. Matter of fact, I think he wrestled against some of the people that were in the Senate with him to get his point across. But I've always admired Lincoln, and I think most of us do admire Lincoln. But he had his faults. There's controversy on whether he really was in the Civil War to free the slaves. There are many, many people that believe he was in the Civil War just to save the Union, to keep everybody together. And he would have kept slavery on if he could have kept the nation as one nation. I think I mentioned this the other day on my radio show. I have a very dark spot in my heredity. Let me tell you who two of my relatives are. Richard Milhouse Nixon is one of my distant relatives. He is a cousin if you do all the evolution around it and everything, he is a cousin through the Mendenhalls. He was a Mendenhall and a Quaker, and some of my former relatives were Mendenhalls, and they were also of that Quaker family. The other one that I'm not so proud of was John Wilkes Booth, who was related to me distantly. I didn't find that out until I was probably 12 years old. And a friend of mine, well, actually the gentleman that I was named after, Glenn Mills, from Cincinnati. He was like an uncle, a non-relative uncle, and great friends with my folks. Sat down with me one day and told me that John Wilkes Booth was a relative of mine. Kind of stunned me at the time. He died too soon, obviously, of a gunshot from John Wilkes Booth. And a day that truly changed the meaning of the United States of America. Anyway, I did have that person text me about defunding police. And I guess this is, I'm going to kind of revert back to my A Progressive Life show that I do on Wednesday afternoon. I had written all this stuff down, a week or two ago when I was struggling with the term defund the police. I don't like that. It sounds like we're going to do away with having a duly authorized police force, and I don't think anybody truly wants that. Now, there are some people that would like that. I think there are some anarchists in our midst that would love to have no order and no law. But I don't know any in the Democratic camp that are that way, and I don't know any in the Republican camp that are that way, but I'm certain there are some kooks, and I'll call them kooks, because if you don't need, I think we need to have at least some authority to maintain our laws. But one of the things I thought that defunding the police really meant was changing where the money goes that we use for the police. Why are we asking our policemen who have very little training in social work? Why are we asking them? And they have probably very little training in psychology. Why are we asking them to be psychiatrists and sociologists? We should have professionals doing that sort of thing, and free up our police force to do what they were asked to do, and that is to make us safer and protect our streets and protect our businesses and protect you and me against each other when we get mad at each other. I was kind of shocked to hear that we had a homicide here in the city yesterday. You don't expect that in a smaller town like this. One of the things I think we could do, redirect some of our money that we have, if we even need to redirect, we could use some money to do better focusing on the psychological profiles of our officers. And I'm not going to say they all need it, but I think they should all have it so that we are all comfortable that the police officer you're talking to when you're pulled over is not one of those kind of guys that grew up as a bully and wants to push you around. That is not the type of police officers we need. And there are police officers like that. I will guarantee you, I've dealt with them. There are also wonderful human beings that are police officers, and we should find more of those. And I think we could do a better job of psychologically profiling. And I know that term profiling is a nasty word in some circles, but I think we could do a better job of finding out if the people we're talking to are people that care about other people. I would think that would be the prime requisite for a police officer, is someone who cares about other people. It wouldn't be bad to have that, psychological profile, because as these gentlemen and ladies become police officers, many of them will get they'll get stress. I can't remember the acronym for it, what we used to call battle fatigue. They will get that type of thing from constantly dealing with home invasions and dealing with spousal abuse and dealing with murder and dealing with thievery and all sorts of things. They will become, they will develop some of these things. And if caught quickly, a good psychological profile could show that they're moving in the wrong direction, and maybe we can help them and get them back on the force in a good direction. I really think that most officers should start in a police force with no lethal force. I don't think it would hurt 3 to 5 years having a person walk the beat with a baton and maybe a taser, some force, but no lethal force. What frightens me is what 2 or 3 of the people that killed George had been on the force for 4 days and really didn't know how to stop what was going on by the superior officer. And I say superior advisedly. I think officers who are allowed to carry lethal force, in England, they weren't allowed to carry lethal force for a long time. They walked the beat with a baton. And so anyway, I think we should... not a lot. Well, let me, after the break, I will tell you, continue on with this tirade. All right, you're listening to On the Air.
Ted, did you know Marion, Ohio is the popcorn capital of the world?
No, Scott, I didn't know that. Could you get me some?
I don't have any at the moment.
Some capital. Does anyone have a Chicken Places number?
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, the talking place.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back. I'm Glenn Coble. You're listening to On the Air. Talking about defunding the police and what I think it is intended to mean, but what a lot of people do not understand it to mean. Anyway, one of the things I think the police officers should be should have is, I think they should, if they're allowed to carry lethal force, they should have training. Let's say, and I'm making all of this up, 40 hours per year on community service and how it relates to weapon training. How you don't draw a gun on somebody just because you can and just because you want them to do what you're saying. How you can, the word cajole is not correct, but let's say cajole a person into doing what they should do. And there should be training like that. Now, I know training. I was talking to Tiffany Roberts yesterday, who's running for office, and I mentioned to her that when I was in the Army, I took, 9 weeks of training on weapons. After 4 or 5 weeks, we actually started firing the M16, and we were training on both the M16 and the M1, I think it was, or 4, which was a big, heavy gun. during my training, I had been trained how to handle a gun safely, how to do everything right, how to be a conscientious weapon user. And we were on the rifle range, and I went down and to check my whether I'd hit the targets or not, and I walked back with the weapon pointed right at the tower where my drill sergeant was, which was absolutely against the training that I had been taking. So I'm not a big fan of just training. And especially in a state that allows, and we don't yet, but would allow you to go into a bar with a concealed weapon, I'm not real fond of people having weapons available to them when they're drinking. So those are couple of things I think we ought to learn about training. Training goes out the window when you're drinking. It also goes out the window when you're angry. So we have to find better police, not better police officers. We have to find police officers that know what empathy is and know how to handle community relationships without going first to the weapon, right? I think the smaller departments, you know, the departments have four or five. I used to cover Chauncey. It's spelled Chauncey. In southern Ohio, it's called Chauncey. I used to cover their mayor's meetings. They had once a month. They had a meeting, and they would bring in their police officer. They had one, and he was allowed to have one deputy. And if he could have found Barney Fife, it would have been stepping up instead of down. Small departments like that, I think they should only have one senior officer that is authorized to carry lethal force. I have no problems with giving them a taser or giving them a baton to give them a little bit more power, but there is no need, in my estimation, that we allow all the officers on the force to carry lethal force. And I don't really know how well, I know that the British were very happy with their system, with their officers carried a baton, I believe, only. They were respected. That's the key. Finding out how to get the police officers respected. I think the police officers have to earn the respect by serving the community, not threatening the community. I think a lot of them do. Somebody just texted me and agrees with me. Thank you. New officers must walk a community beat, I think. They need to walk the beat for like 3 years, maybe. Walking as an individual, walk during the daylight. As a pair, I think you need, at night, I think you need a pair. I think new officers should not only be unarmed, not totally unarmed, but not carrying lethal force. And I think they should walk the beat so that they learn about the people, so that they get to know the little kids that are on the block that might get into some mischief that need to be straightened out, not be scared to death of the cops. I remember as a little guy, I was not scared to death of policemen, but I certainly knew that I could not backtalk to them. And my father and mother didn't threaten me about that, nor was I ever threatened by a police officer. But I did know that I needed to respect that the police officer, if he told me I had to do something, I had to do it. And I think that was learned because the police officers we had, and I'm thinking back when I was in South Bend, Indiana, the police officers I knew really cared about us, the ones I knew. I'm sure there is always going to be a bad cop, but I hate to use that term. There's always bad cops. Yes, there are always going to be bad cops, but let's not blame things only on bad cops. I think good cops can go bad by the pressure that they're under. I think good cops can go bad by just too much relationship with people that don't care about law and order, and people that don't care about doing the right thing. I think a police officer should always care about doing the right thing. Anyway, I know I live in a dream world. I think we should repurpose some of the police department money to help them in those social work problems that they face up to. I don't think a policeman should have to do that. He's got a hard enough job as it is, or she's got a hard enough job as it is, let alone having to figure out what to do with a homeless guy and figure out how to social work works to help family squabbles and stuff like that. We should have people on our payroll that are trained for that sort of thing. They can be in the police department, and therefore it'll be the money for the police department, but it will be purposed for things that the beat walker doesn't have to do. He shouldn't, or she shouldn't have to always be a social worker. Not that it's not a bad thing. A lot of them are good at that, and I don't mind them being good at it, but I think we should hire professionals when it gets tough. I think police departments should provide robust mental health support for our office, for our officers, for their families, and give them an annual checkup for that PTSD, which I'm certain they are all subject to just because of some of the evil things they are forced to watch happen, and some of the lack of respect, unfortunately, that our citizens give them. I always have respected good police officers. I've also known some police officers that I think are not so good. But that's a personal opinion, right? I also believe that there should be significant pay adjustments, and they should be required to take vacation time, paid vacation time, just so they can get their keel straight and on the line. It's hard to keep a sailboat going if your keel falls off. And these gentlemen and ladies need to have some vacation time to recoup in their own brains. I really, truly believe that higher education should be standard. I don't think we should hire police officers who haven't had a higher level of education. I would like to see the state police are required to have a college degree. Now, I don't know that that's important, maybe an associate degree, but I think the need to have people that want to learn and can learn is kind of important. Now, the gentleman that we had, one of the gentlemen that we had when I was down in Chansey, my guess is he didn't get out of high school. But he was a tough guy, and he certainly liked to wield his power. And I'm not sure that's a good policeman. But they didn't pay him anything. And how are you going to get somebody that's good at his job, has some education, cares about people? If you give a guy $10,000, $15,000 a year and tell him to keep a city going in law with law and order. Now, the city of Chansey is probably, 400 people. It's a very small town. But it still seems to me if you're going to hire an officer that doesn't have a high school education, you're asking for it. Not that education, formal education, is always the answer. I've known an awful lot of doctorate degree people that I wouldn't want to be police officers. Well, anyway, we're going to be switching away. You're listening to Glenn Coble, and we're on the air. That's the name of the show, and I'm glad you tuned in. Got about a minute to go, and I appreciate you letting me run on that, and the person that texted me to talk about that. I hope that answers your question. I know it doesn't answer the question. I think the term defunding the police is an unfortunate use term. It's it's really not quite what it sounds like. It sounds like we're going to go into anarchy and have no police officers. I don't think anybody wants that. Oh, getting another message here. Nope, that wasn't for wasn't for the show, so I'm going to pass on that. But I hope you'll tune in about a minute or about 15 minutes. We'll do a swap shop, and if you want to call in with things that you're interested in selling, you can call to 740-383-9944. That'll be on Swap Shop again, 740-383-9944. And don't forget, we really don't put on the air things that require registration, like cars or guns or houses or, you know, and motorcycles, stuff like that. If you have to have a registration for it, we'd rather not put that on the air. Matter of fact, we won't put that on the air. But we'll be looking forward to having your calls. If you have a yard sale or something like that, we'll put that on for you. If you have a church bazaar, which probably don't happen at this time of the year. But if you have something going on at a nonprofit organization that you'd like to mention to people, we'll be glad to hear from you. 740-383-9944. Have a good day.
You're listening to WWGH Radio, LP, Marion, Ohio.